Do you know who Lynn Conway is? Without her, you wouldn't be able to listen to this podcast, text your mum, or even email your boss. Like Alan Turing, her legacy in computer science, pioneering the microchip, changed the world. So why is she barely known? Well, she also happens to be trans. This Pride Month, cut through the noise and misleading headlines about the trans plus community with the history lesson you never had on the Queer AF podcast.
If you want to change the future, start living as if you're already there.
New episodes every Monday.
Welcome to No One Told Us, the podcast that tells the truth about parenting and talks about all the stuff you wish you knew before having kids. I'm your host, Rachel, and today I am really, really excited to welcome fellow podcaster Jamie Kelton. Jamie is the host, producer, and founder of the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I love that tagline. We're going to talk about where that came from. This award-winning and Webby-honored show has been highlighting, uplifting, celebrating, and normalizing LGBTQIA plus families, one weekly interview at a time. And we are using this episode to kick off Pride Month. It's something so important to me, so personal to me, and I know lots of members of my community are going to be so excited to welcome you to the podcast and to hear all about your family and things that you find are really important to highlight. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. That was such a nice intro. You're so much more like button up than I am. I make my guests introduce themselves.
Oh, I love that. Maybe I should start doing that. It's way less work.
I know you have it all, but you had it all planned out and figured out. That was beautifully done.
I have an assistant and I would be literally lost without her. She creates all of these outlines for me and they're just beautiful. So I won't take full credit for that. Thanks to Emma.
Emma. I need an Emma. I have fake assistants, Helen and Beulah. They're not real.
But they're AI?
But I talk to them. No, they're not even AI. No, they're just, they roll the tape every week. I talk to them every week in the episode. Helen and Beulah, please roll that. I mean, I talk to Helen. They're on the couch right now smoking cigarettes and drinking whiskey. They're the worst assistants ever. But yes, I have.
Emma.
Yep.
We were just chatting before we started recording and realizing that you grew up in the same neighborhood as my husband here in San Francisco. It's like such a small world. But now you live in New York. Mm-hmm. And I actually didn't get to ask you, how old are your kids?
11 and 7.
Okay. So we have one that's the same age. My oldest is 7 and a half.
Oh, okay.
It's a fun age. Yeah. He is just wrapping up first grade. And it's amazing how much more independent they get around this age, like just playing to themselves, reading. It's like a whole new world for me. I'm loving it.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. My son is in second grade because it's New York. So I guess, you know.
Right. The birthdays.
Cutoff, yeah. The cutoff is different. But it's still a challenge. Every day is a challenge. Yeah. But it's fun. It's a fun age because they say funny things and they have funny ideas. He was like yesterday, he was like on our walk home from school. He's like, Mom, what do you think I should be when I grow up? And I'm thinking we're going to have like a great discussion about you can be whatever you want to be, you know, like and talk about careers and different things. And he goes, well, I'm torn between training dragons and becoming a Pokemon trainer. Which one do you think I should do?
He and my son would get along very well.
Yeah, he's like, I like them both a lot, so I can't
decide.
Tough
choice. Tough call, buddy.
Yeah, I chose dragons.
Cute.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the most lucrative, I would assume. Yeah.
Then he argued with me. I said, I don't know, Orion, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to do. So
this like fictional argument, it's so classic 7-year-old. Your podcast is so wonderful because it highlights just like how normal and like just regular. Like, I think people, especially in today's climate, with a certain demographic of the population, luckily not many of them listen to this podcast, but I think a lot of people assume that like LGBTQIA plus families look different, talk differently, have all these different ideas and like wild out there beliefs, and like really you're just like everybody else. And it just baffles me that people don't understand that. So that's why I really wanted to kick off Pride Month, kind of just like talking to you, hearing what you have to say about the families that you interview every week, because I really just want there to be more understanding, because I think when we have understanding, we can have more compassion.
Humanizing.
Exactly. Just the humanity. And I think a lot of it is like there are tons of gay people in my family, tons of gay people in my husband's family. It's just something that, and we grew up in, we live in San Francisco.
Right.
And so for us, it's just like so normal. Like my kids, we've never even had to explicitly teach them. Sometimes kids have two mommies. Like it's just never had to even be an explicit conversation we've had because they just have grown up that way since birth, like seeing families that look different. And to them, it's not different. Right. But I know that not everybody gets those opportunities in their lives. So I think a podcast like yours where people can just expose themselves and learn is so important.
Well, it's all about representation, and representation is everything, especially for the L'Egyptquois community, which I call us.
I like that.
To make it sound fancy.
But, it's way easier to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, representation is everything, and it comes up in almost every interview I do with queer folks who are trying to make babies or who have babies. And, you know, it a lot of times it comes down to, well, I didn't see it growing up, so I didn't know. And, you know, and it goes both ways. It goes on both sides. Not just the L'Egyptquois community, but it's all of us. And our children could really, really, really benefit from being exposed to all walks of life. And we should be teaching our children about all walks of life. And yes, there are nuanced differences between L'Egyptquois families and the non-queer families, which I like to call y'all. But, like even in the description of my show, the ending is, yes, while we face our challenges and we have differences, we're just like every other family out there yelling at our kids when we're trying to get out the door and they're already 15 minutes late for school and they still haven't put their shoes on, right? Like we're all the same in that respect. We all have the same challenges. Ours are just sometimes a little bit different and a little bit more nuanced. And making our families out is a little more complicated in most instances.
Yes, that is true. You have to be a little more intentional about it.
Exactly. There's no accidents. There are a couple of accidents, and I've interviewed a couple of them, but it's very rare.
Wow. I need to go listen to those episodes.
Yeah. I'm never expecting it when it comes out either. It's a big shock.
Wow. Fascinating. Yeah. You have the tagline of your podcast, which is so brilliant to me. You say it's the show all about family, but with gay. What does that mean to you? How did you come up with that?
So there is a story there. It's actually, I interviewed Rosie O'Donnell. I've interviewed her twice, actually. And the first time, she was telling... she's telling the story of being in A League of Their Own. She's so funny. You have to watch it because she does a really great Penny Marshall, obviously, because she's, you know, good at that stuff.
Right.
So she was like pretending to be Penny Marshall and the thing that Penny Marshall said about her about the movie. And then she segued into, you know, and this was years, this was like 2019. She segued into, you know, they're making a TV show of A League of Their Own, but with gay. And it stuck with me. Like forever, I wanted to make t-shirts of it. Like
I was going to say, that's like some merch opportunity right there.
Right. So the cool story, but it's not that cool. It came from Rosie O'Donnell.
Very cool.
But I don't even think she knows that. I just added it, you know, after the fact. And for me, it's like a cool little thing knowing that that's Rosie O'Donnell's words.
But that's else very knows. Cool. Yeah. Don't tell her. She might charge you a royalty or something.
She wouldn't. She's such a lovely person, honestly. And she got a bad rap in the media for so long, but I text her after I met her. She was like, oh my God, honey, just text me anytime. She doesn't always write me back. I tell you that. She ghosts me a lot.
Didn't she just move like to Ireland or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She couldn't take it anymore. She couldn't take that. There's the troll. I mean, I get trolled on social media because it's gay. It's L'Egyptquois content. Yeah. I get, especially more lately, the trolls are like, it's insane. But like, imagine being Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh, I know.
Just and just and proud.
Being so open. Yeah. I mean, I would imagine that these last few months have felt very heavy and unsafe. And because it's not just about who's in charge, but it's like when the base is so emboldened to be so hateful, that affects people in their day-to-day lives. And I think that's what a lot of those voters maybe don't understand.
Yeah, it's harmful rhetoric, and it brings the zombies. In my head, I see the zombies coming out of their graves. Like it
that's
brings
what they
them
look
out.
Like. Yeah.
You know, like they think they can say the silent parts out loud again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always been in their heads. Not like they're different, but
right.
Although some actually, no, it does. I do think it also feeds the false narratives that they're putting out into the world. And so some people will get indoctrinated with these false narratives about LGBTQ folks being groomers. And the amount of times I get called a groomer, I can't even, it's hilarious. Because if you see me parenting, like, it's hilarious. I'm not a groomer. I'm not even close to a groomer.
Those people need to look at their churches. That's what they need to do.
They sure do.
The call is coming from inside the house usually with
so
that
funny.
One.
I'm like, a groomer, huh? For the past week, I've talked to my daughter about consent every night at dinner. Like,
of course.
Such a groomer.
Yeah. Oh my God, they're so, the part that bothers me the most is that they're just dumb and like none of their arguments are sound mm-hmm. logically, and that's like really hard to argue
yeah.
with. It's hard to argue with that. Yeah.
No, I used to, and sometimes I just fall into it and I argue and it's, you can't win with ignorance, but
no.
Like, now I just block and delete. But good. Then they come at you and they're like, and they say like, oh, you're too much of a coward. You just have to block us. And so then I block and delete.
That makes them really mad, though, because what a troll wants is like a reaction at mm-hmm. the end of the day. So yeah. There's nothing that can make them more mad than just ignoring them. Mm-hmm. I love how you approach this just with like humor. I mean, I can't imagine how difficult it must be to be dealing with that on a daily basis. I mean, I get my fair amount of hate as well, but it's not directed at like the person that I am or like the yeah. core of who I am. And I would imagine that that's just a whole nother level of hurtful. And yeah. But in your podcast you have so much like levity and laughter. Why do you think that that is such an important tool in the conversation around queer families?
Well, first of all, I think that that's just how I deal with everything, with levity mm. and laughter, and it's the only way I can get through things. And I get bored if there's not a lot of laughter. So there's that. But I think all of us, like, if you're a queer person out in the world, you have to develop a certain amount of resilience. Mm. You need a raincoat, and you learn to you learn to put that raincoat on early on, you know. And that skill of being resilient just develops over time and gets stronger and stronger the more you face. And I want to be clear, I don't face that much compared to so many folks in the queer community who really face a crazy amounts of hate and danger. I don't, but I get trolled on social media, but I don't, in my everyday life, nobody cares that I'm that gay mom with crazy hair, you know? I don't know. They might say it behind my back, but.
No, I bet they're like, oh, I want to be her friend. She's so cool.
I don't know about that.
Well, you're definitely in New York, not. Which you're in New York, which helps. And, you know, living in liberal cities and bluer states, I think, is helpful. But again, like, there is this harmful rhetoric that just goes online and can get to you no matter where you are. So that resilience, I think, is really inspiring. Do you talk to your kids about this kind of thing? Do you feel like they're too young to hear about this? Have they experienced it?
No, they haven't. They've definitely. Well, both my kids have experienced other kids asking, like, how do you have two moms? You know, silly questions.
More just like curiosity.
Curiosity. And, yeah. As they get older, like my daughter, when she was in fifth grade, some kids were being like cheeky about it, goading her. Mm. Like, how is that even possible? How does that even work? Like, they know very well how it works.
Right.
And so she would tell me and I would give her like one-liners to say back, and I don't know if she did, because I'm always like, cut them down.
Yes.
shut it down. Cut it. Because clearly I know what this kid's intentions are.
Of course.
When he's asking. Yeah. But for the most part, no. We have lots of gay families in our school, which is great. And for the most part, everybody's really accepting and nobody cares. And my kids don't face a lot of nothing, you know. Good. They're more interested in, like, as Pokemon and dragons, but like
stuff that kids should be worried about and thinking about. That's
yeah.
Good.
But I do. I mean, I talk to we're an open book, and I talk to my kids about who they are and where they come from on the regular, because we kind of have to as queer families. Mm-hmm. It's obvious that mm-hmm. something was done in order to make this family, and the right. kids figure that out pretty quickly too.
Right.
And so, you know, it's really important that we all, and I talk about this on my show all the time, like we have to talk about where they come from. Like as soon as they have ears to listen, we start mm-hmm. talking about it and mm-hmm. they pick up, you know, you drop the seed and they pick up the seed when they're ready to take that part of the information in, and then they ask questions. And mm-hmm. I use a lot of books. There's some great books out there just for talking about origin stories, how families are made, how babies are made, how where yep. we come from, you know, all the things. So
yeah,
we're an open book when it comes to that, and they can ask us anything and they can tell us anything. I don't know if they always do tell us everything because, you know, because they're kids. And
right.
my daughter is a tween.
Yeah, she's at that age.
And that's a whole nother yeah, can of worms, I'll yeah. tell you that much. But
yeah.
But we're open and honest with them. And
yeah.
that's all we can do, really. And loving,
exactly.
obviously.
Exactly, yeah. Well, and I was going to ask, too, like, yes, there are so many ways where your family is exactly like mine or like the person down the street. Like, it's just a family. But mm-hmm. then there are other ways where the reality is you are navigating things that other families maybe don't have to navigate. So is that like one of the biggest ones, you think, or what are some of the other ways?
I have funny things that have happened, right? Like we show up in the world, we're always together, two ladies, two kids, you know, walking around as a family. And there was this time when the kids were a lot younger. Must have been like 6 years ago. And there was this doorman we would always pass when we were walking down the street. He was very friendly with us. He was friendly with the kids. And he would always talk to us. And always walking together as a family, right? And then one day, I'm walking my daughter home from a basketball something or other. And he's talking, hey, how you doing? Where are you coming from? Oh, we just did basketball. Oh, basketball's good. I used to be a coach. It's really good for the girls. Really good. But you've got to be careful, though. You got to be careful, though, because sometimes the basketball will turn them into lesbians. And this is one of the things, like, in many instances, when you don't have kids, you can just, like, I don't need to come out to this doorman man who right. clearly is blind, but, like, right. I don't need to come out in that moment. But my daughter's there, right?
Yeah.
So if my daughter's there, I have to model pride, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, you have that moment in your head, like, oh my God, how am I going to, what am I going to,
yeah.
So I just blurted out right back, oh, that's okay, because I'm a lesbian. And then and then he was so, oh, yeah, my wife has a lot of lesbian friends, and, you know. Like, okay. And then I had to stand there for like five more
sure.
minutes hearing him like explain himself.
Oh, God. He must have wanted to crawl into a hole and die.
I think he did. Yeah. Yeah. But like, it's like things like that. Like before kids, I could just ignore stuff. Like if I was in the taxi and the taxi driver said, you going to meet your boyfriend? I could just say, yep.
Yeah.
Going mm-hmm. to meet my boyfriend. He loves playing football, you know, like whatever. But like if my kids are there, I have to say, no, going yeah. to meet my wife, their other
right.
mom, you know?
Like, right.
So it's like always there's a lot more awkward moments.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I wouldn't have even thought about that. But that makes so much sense. And it's probably mm-hmm. exhausting. You're probably like, please just don't say anything that I have to like defend right now. I'm not in the mood.
Yeah. Well, now that my daughter's older now, though, she'll be like, mom, just leave it.
Okay. Yes. That tracks for a preteen. She's like, please don't say anything to embarrass yeah. me.
And then I have to say it because then I'm like, no. We are proud. Don't hide yourself. You know.
Oh my God. That's so good. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and talk more about your own parenting journey. We'll be right back.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
So we talk on my show a lot about how parenthood really like changes the core of who you are, but also your brain. And I just did a really cool interview with an author who wrote Mother Brain, but she talks all about how it's kind of this myth that there's like gendered changes and that there is some of that with like our different hormones and all of that kind of stuff, but that really it's the act of caregiving that changes and rewires our brain, regardless of if you're a gestational parent or a non-birthing parent. Like, it's across the board, you see these changes, and you see them more when the parent is involved in caregiving. So I'm so curious to hear about how your experiences have been with like changes in, I don't know if you can really notice changes in your own brain, but like, what was kind of your early experience with being in that postpartum newborn period?
Well, I will say, I'll give you kind of a queer perspective on this. And here's one of the nuanced differences that, like, on my show, I would ask, oh, you have two kids. Who gave birth to them? Whose body did they come from? Whose genetics are they, right? Because it's not a given. Right. And so on that note, like, I have the benefit of being both a non-bio mom and a bio mom to one of my kids. So one of my kids I birthed and one of my kids my wife birthed. So there are little differences. So when I first became a mom, I was non-bio mom. So my wife gave birth to our daughter.
Okay.
And a lot of fears came up for me surrounding this whole, like, being the non-bio mom, oh my God, am I going to bond with her? Is she going to bond with me? Like, her whole pregnancy, I was a neurotic mess. We don't all get neurotic like me. I realize I am more neurotic than most.
Nothing like parenting to realize how neurotic you are.
Right, totally.
Yeah.
So my journey to parenthood was a little bit different, although I'm sure there are many non-queer parents who are also non-bio parents. We all come to parenthood in different ways.
Of course.
Yeah. But it was riddled with this fear that I wasn't going to bond with the baby because I wasn't giving birth to the baby. And I learned very quickly that that is not true at all. I also learned, because then I did give birth to the second one, I also learned that I'm a slow burn when it comes to bonding, which is not something I even knew was a thing. So right. It took me a little while to feel that bond with my daughter. And I just assumed it was because I was not biologically connected to her. I didn't give birth to her. I didn't have the hormones, all the stuff. Then I gave birth to my son and was expecting this immediate bond like everybody talks about. And I didn't have it with him either. And that's normal.
Yep.
And that was a huge awakening for me that everybody's experience of birth and parenthood is extremely different. No two are alike, and you got to be careful with these expectations because they can really throw you into a place that you don't need to be. Like, things will happen naturally, and it's okay how they happen. And so that's just a nuanced path to parenthood with a queer perspective thrown in there,
right,
I think.
Right.
I'm not sure I answered your question,
though. You did. No, you did. And I'm curious if you know, or I don't know if you want to speak for her, but I'm curious if your wife had similar experiences where she noticed like some differences, but also some similarities in each child.
I think, so like I said, I'm neurotic and not everybody's as neurotic as me. I think she had a little bit of that, but also you have to keep in mind that this was our second kid. She had already given birth to one. So I think it was like when it's this, I don't know, like because it was the first time being a parent for me and I had no idea what this parenthood thing was at all. Right. It was more likely for me to just feel those fears. And with her, we're exhausted. You know, we had a 4-year-old who was a handful. like there was no time to think, you know?
Right. Totally. Yeah.
So I don't think she's also just not neurotic like I am.
Yeah.
And doesn't overthink things and stuff.
That must be nice.
Yeah, it must be. I don't have that gene.
Must be nice to live inside a brain like that.
Yeah, but I do think that many, many people experience this, like, mm-hmm. fear of not bonding. And it's not just only non-bio parents. I know pregnant moms fear this as well. Pregnant people, I should say. It's a common thing, and it's okay to feel that way. And just know it's going to all be fine.
Totally. Was there anything that you did that you felt like kind of encouraged the bonding process?
Well, no, not really. I mean, you know.
Just figure it out as you go.
Yeah. And being a caretaker and being with that baby screaming for hours on end.
And trial and error. Yeah.
And being up all night, you know.
Yeah.
Feeding her and reading a Kindle on my phone.
Yeah.
So that's not really bonding time, is it? But yeah, no, I don't know. Just over time, it came.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. And she's just as much my kid as the other one is. And they both drive me equally amounts crazy. And I love them both with every ounce of my being. So.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting. I'm curious too. So this is something that comes up a lot because I do have a lot of queer families in my Instagram community. And sometimes we'll get on tangents of talking about, like, you know, the mental load and dividing up household labor and stuff. And it sometimes will turn into not a man bashing session, but we do see some themes.
Yeah.
It's always interesting to me when we're kind of talking about husbands.
Yep.
And then I have, you know, my lesbian moms messaging me like, God, I'm so glad I'm married to a woman. Like, we just never deal with this. But I'm like, okay, that can't be a totally universal experience though, right? Like, or is it? Because I feel very jealous of that. I guess I'm curious about, have you guys dealt with that? Have you had to intentionally figure out how to split the load of, like, household and parenting stuff? Or does it just come really naturally to you to just 50-50 everything?
I think, and I talk about this a lot on my show, and it's not just to give you peace of mind. It is not completely across the board. There are the random rare queer couple that keep it heteronormative in the, you know, but it's far and few
between. But it's more the exception than the norm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But cool. I think because we are already out of the box, right? And we've lived a lot of our life in many cases out of the box and challenging norms, that when we get into a parenting relationship together, we're already, like, so well versed in finding a new path, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't even feel like finding a new path. It's just, we're going to do it our way because there is no way. There is no way. I don't see it on TV. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, we don't fit that mold. Yeah. All the TV shows we see and the dad going into the work and the mom doing the dishes, we don't fit it.
Right.
So we just, in many instances, it just comes naturally that we do what the person does better. And that's how it goes, you know, like.
Makes sense.
Like in my instance, I was neurotic and I was so scared I wasn't going to bond with the baby in the beginning that I was hellbent that everything was going to be 50-50. Mm-hmm. I am doing at least half, if not more, than you, because I need to make sure this bond happens, right?
Okay.
So there's that too. We each have that mom. We want to be mommy. That's in my house,
right?
And so we kind of—I wouldn't say we compete, but you know, we've always done everything 50-50. Like she does one kid at bedtime, I do the other, and then the next night we reverse it. And then so we do that every night.
Cute.
The older kid walks the dog. And so it switches, you know? And then there are some things that I do. I do the dinners. She makes the lunches, right? Mm-hmm. Like we are very like, nope.
You play to your strengths.
Yes.
Yeah.
Except she does the laundry because I'm terrible at that.
Oh, same. My husband does almost all of the household chores actually because I've kind of just figured out how to be bad at things. And
that's amazing. See, well, you're already one step to queer. Good job.
I'm almost there. No, I tell him all the time. He'll like joke. He'll be like, oh my God, I had a dream you cheated on me, or like something like that. And I'm like, trust me, like the last thing I need is another man. Like if we ever don't work out, like I am not getting myself another man. Like I love you, but I'm good. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little more about representation. Be right back. Earlier, Jamie, you were talking about how important representation is, especially if you are raising your family, raising your kids in areas that maybe aren't as liberal, aren't as accepting, aren't as, you know, welcoming to people from different walks of life and who have different families. So what do you mean by normalize, elevate, and celebrate when you're talking about queer families? And why is that three-part mission so vital?
Well, because normalizing our families is a lifeline, right? Mm-hmm. Like we are othered so much. Queer people are othered so much, especially the most marginalized in our community, which is really under attack right now, the trans community.
Yeah.
We are othered more than we are normalized. Mm-hmm. And so my mission is to do everything in my power to normalize us in a celebratory and uplifting way. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't happen and we don't see ourselves. We don't. If you live in some rural town and there are no queer people in your town, or at least not out.
They're there.
Yeah. They're there, but not out.
Yeah.
You're not going to see it on the billboards. You're not going to see it on your TV.
Right.
There's a gay side character in some shows, but it's not on the kids' channels, that's for sure.
No.
There are no gay moms on the kids' channels. Mm-hmm. And if there are, they're like bugs. Like I think Wanda Sykes was so sad. Gay mom bug in a cartoon. I only know that because I did the voice. I did a little voice on that cartoon, and the spider had gay moms. Voice for that.
Oh my God! Okay, I need to look that up because my next question was actually going to be like, have you seen any shift in media since you've become a parent?
I mean, yeah, in adult programming, yes, there are gay shows, or there's more. You know, you got the non-binary character, and Miranda came out on Just Like That, the mm-hmm. Sex and the City. There's more. It's still not enough.
No.
And it's still not normalized every time in an uplifting and an inspiring way.
Well, and a lot of times it's kind of just like a trope, or it's mm-hmm. like a caricature, and it's like they're just adding a gay character to kind of check that box, but it's like them being gay is the storyline instead of them just existing.
Right. And there are more things coming out where it's just... there happens to be a gay couple in the friend group, right? That is starting to happen. It is. But I want to see a show where it's an all-gay friend group. Because guess what? My friend group is all lesbians.
Right.
So I haven't seen that show.
No.
That except would be a great
show. The L word.
Right.
The OG. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so we need more. We need more. But yeah. I did just interview this couple who wrote a movie. They're gay dads. And they wrote a movie about them. It's actually one of the, like, their story. And the point of the show is not that they're gay. The point of the show, it turns into a dark thriller and then it gets really weird and crazy, but it's nice because they're just being a loving couple in the movie,
right?
And I want to see more of that, not where it's like, well, let me tell dad I'm gay and then
that's the whole story. Yeah. Right. No, I totally agree, and that's why I would love to hear if you have good recommendations for kids books too, because I know for kids shows it's like not happening at all, but I love when I find a book. We just got one from the library. It's called like The Best Bed for Me, and it has absolutely nothing to do with some families have two mommies. It's like, it's not one of those heavy-handed type books. Mm-hmm. It's just a book about this kid going to bed and like pretending to be all these different animals. It's really cute, and the parents just happen to be two moms, and it's not even mentioned. It's like, it's 0% mentioned. It has nothing to do with the story. It's just in the illustrations. Like if you read the book, you wouldn't even know. Yeah. But if you look at the pictures, you can see, oh, that's a two-mom family.
Mm-hmm. That's what I
love. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. There are some books, and more are coming out, but there's one I'm thinking of. It's called Mighty May Won't Cry Today. Oh. I can't think of the author. We have it, though, in our bookshelf. And it's about a little girl's first day of school. Mm. And she just happens to have two moms,
mm-hmm.
which
I
is
love that.
Great. And then there's another one called My Parents Won't Stop Talking. and it's about this little family is walking to the park, but they get sidetracked by the neighbors and the kid goes crazy in their brain because they have to be patient. It's a really cute book, but it's
oh my
two
gosh,
moms.
Cute. Okay, amazing.
So those are two that come to mind mm-hmm. off the top of my head. We have so many others. There are so many others that are just amazing.
Awesome.
A lot of them do mention that, you know, Heather has two moms. And
yeah, and I think that's okay, too. I think there's a place for, like, that explicit teaching, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, my kids don't really need that explicit teaching because it's just a part of our everyday life. But for a lot of kids that have those questions about, like, why does my friend at school have two dads? Or, you know, they mm-hmm. might need that more explicit teaching from a book.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always have to be, like, such a huge thing.
Right, it doesn't. That's also the family book by Todd Parr.
Yes, that's a great one.
That's
Todd
a good
Parr
one because
is amazing.
Because they can ask questions if they want
yep.
to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, there's another book where it's just this little kid playing on the beach, and it's just, I don't remember what it's called, but it's the kids he meets on the beach keep asking him questions about which mom does this, which mom does that, which
oh.
mom, which is interesting and just a way to introduce it. I think it's called Which Mom Does This. I don't remember what it's
okay,
called.
Okay, that's all right. People can Google it.
But it's a cute book. It's cute.
That is cute because I bet those types of questions are what come up a lot for little kids who are trying to kind of make sense of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And those are the kind of questions my kids would get asked. You know,
right.
which mommy does this? You know, and
right.
the answers are cute. Both moms do. You know, it's sweet.
Yeah.
It's cute.
Oh, I love that. Do you have any other recommendations for parents who are looking for, whether it's a queer family or a not queer family listening, what are your favorite kind of like go-to resources for teaching kids how to be inclusive and how to be allies and things like that? Do you have any resources that you love?
It's really books. There's mm-hmm. this company, and it's Pride, so it's a really great time to check them out. There's this company called Our Shelves.
Mm-hmm.
O-U-R-S-H-E-L-V-E-S. And it's like a book subscription company. So you can subscribe to it and you'll get a box of books every month that are
That
Our Shelves is more it gives you all kinds of books, but they're all inclusive of
amazing.
All identities.
Cool.
They'll give you age appropriate boxes. So I recommend that to everybody who needs a baby shower gift because you can just give the first box and then they can carry on.
So smart.
Yeah,
I love giving books for a baby shower. People don't need more onesies or more blankets.
Right. Books is good. And they keep on giving. But
yes.
Books. That's how I talk to my kids about everything. When I am in a conundrum, I Google,
same.
What's a book about this? Like,
same.
Like the cell phone thing is happening right now, technology with my 11-year-old.
Oh,
so
God.
I'm Googling, I'm looking for books. And I look for podcasts too. Like listen to and watch things that are made by people whose voice is a part of that community.
Exactly. Amplify those voices. So
yeah.
That brings me to your podcast. Perfect segue to wrap up. So where can people find you, connect with you, and listen to your podcast?
I'm everywhere you can find podcasts. The Queer Family Podcast. Nice long title. It tells you exactly what it is. And you can find me at thequeerfamilypodcast.com, on social media at The Queer Family Podcast, where I put up clips from episodes and then also just like anecdotes about daily life with kids. Sometimes it's queer centric and sometimes it's just having kids is hard.
Yes, for all of us.
Yeah, so you know, all the places. I'm all over Instagram, TikTok, Facebook.
Perfect.
Although I'm thinking of ending Facebook because they're really
Facebook is a dumpster fire. I was gonna say the comments on there must get like absolutely unhinged.
Yeah, there are posts I just won't put up on Facebook.
Yeah,
just because I know they're gonna come after me. And
yeah, because that's where all the like weirdo like losers hang out. But like, I mean, honestly,
to put it lightly, I don't know. My mom loves Facebook. Like I get
yes,
it.
Yes, the weirdo losers and the, you
and
know,
the moms
and the boomers. I'm sorry. Sorry to the boomers. You're not weirdo losers. It's just what you
well,
know.
Some of them are. I'm sorry. You
some
know.
Of them, it's a Venn diagram and they're in the middle.
Yeah. I mean, some of the Gen Xers are. Me too. And some of the millennials. I mean,
and some Gen Z. Gen Z is becoming more and more unhinged by the day. I know.
And Gen Alpha, forget about it. They're all assholes.
They're done. Jamie, this has been such a fun conversation. I know that so many people will get tons out of it, and I really hope that they head on over to your podcast to listen to more, because you are just so wonderful and funny, and I really appreciate you using your voice.
Thank you. And I do want to add one thing.
Yeah.
Because we didn't go into it. Like sleep training. I saw you did the thing about sleep training and how it's not for everyone and not every baby. I am, wholeheartedly agreeing with you. Not every baby can be sleep trained. Don't get down on yourself if your baby won't sleep train. The amount of books we bought when my daughter wouldn't sleep, and she never slept, ever. Yeah. But don't beat yourself up, parents. It's okay. There's other ways. You're going to make it through, too.
Thank you for adding that. I wasn't going to ask you anything about that because it's very polarizing, and I don't want to send even more trolls your way for, like, sleep training slander, but I appreciate you for saying that.
Oh, God, the amount of times. Well, did you try this? Yes, Gina, I tried.
Yeah, I tried everything. Oh, my God, nothing drives me more insane. Did you try a white noise machine?
Oh, my God, Gina. Yes, Becky. Yes. Yes, I have that book. I read it front to back. Did you?
Oh, my God. Oh, it's so ridiculous. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you for adding that little nugget for us. I appreciate it.
I'm here for you. I feel you. I feel your pain out there. I get it. I know. It's hard.
And do your kids sleep now?
Yeah.
Okay. So see, everybody, there's light at the end of the tunnel. That's what I'm always telling you. They do sleep eventually.
Sometimes my older one does take melatonin, though. I'm not going to lie.
Whatever we have to do to get through.
Because mama needs to sleep, too.
Yes, it's so important.
And sleep is the most important thing.
Yes.
So whatever you have to do, you know.
You got to get your sleep.
Yeah.
I go to bed so early to get my, like, 8 or 9 hours. And yep. I just have to.
I can't stay up past 10 anymore anyway.
Oh, no.
And even that's
like a wild night for
pushing
me.
Pushing it.
Yeah. Same.
When we're sitting on the couch watching, I'm sorry, I know you want to go.
Couch
watching a show, and we're into the show, and then we'll see that it's 9:45, and we're like, oh my God, what are we doing? Who do we think we are?
We are wild. No, same. Like, if we're up till 10, I'm like, that cannot happen again, because now I'm done for 3 days. Yeah. And then I get like in an anxiety spiral that I'm not going to get enough sleep. And then
you,
like,
don't go to sleep.
And then I can't. Yeah, exactly. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's so annoying.
It's so hard.
Ugh.
It's so hard.
Well, this was so fun. This was so fun. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for creating this space as well.
Of course. It's important. It's my pleasure.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.